This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 760-569-7676, then entering the access code 192919 pound when prompted. Or if you have a computer or smartphone, you can go to bbs.com and navigate to Station 2 and listen. Click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with a call-in question for our guests, toll-free, USA, Canada, 1-888-429-5471. This evening, our guest is Mike Malloy, a radio host himself. Mike's nationally syndicated program can now be heard weeknights from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time on affiliates from coast to coast, border to border, across the fruited plain, and on XM satellite and Sirius radio as well as on live streaming internet. Hello, Mike. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Mike, my questions for you this evening, and I know you're very vocal about all of this, but let's start with an introduction on you, Mike. Tell us all about your career. And what was your upbringing like? What did you do before broadcasting? And how did you get to where you are right now as a radio host?
Well, I never had any intention of getting into radio. That kind of was an accident. I was brought up in Ohio and spent up until I was about 21 in the Toledo area, and then moved south as a distribution person for Look magazine, and stayed in the South. I've been in the South for about 45 years now. My slide into talk radio started with CNN. I live in Atlanta, in the metro Atlanta area, and where I have lived here for about 40 years. And I went to work for CNN shortly after they became CNN, shortly after they went to started televising, and it was fun. It was very interesting. It lasted about 3 years for me, and I had a friend who suggested I try radio as a talk show host, and I had no idea what she was talking about in terms of actually doing it, and she said, well, you know, you like to talk, so this is your perfect environment. Come on and give it a shot. So I did, and that was like 25 years ago, and I've stayed with it ever since.
Oh, that's great. I'm kind of like in your footsteps at this moment. Let's move right along with, you know, the agenda that is going on today in the United States. And, you know, everything that's been going on here in the United States with so many questionable events that are happening from the Bush administration, then on to the Obama administration, and everything seems to be going down the same path. There is no change. There is no difference. You know, terror, the war on terror, terror from the Middle East, and also this recent NSA spying program like PRISM and the Verizon scandals. What is your take on all of this?
That's one hell of a question. My take on it is it's a natural consequence of living in what has become a national security state, that is the United States. When the technology is available and the technology continues to be developed that makes the accumulation of information so easy, then that information is going to be accumulated. It almost takes on a life of its own. It's kind of like nuclear weapons. Once nuclear bombs were developed, atomic bombs, then it was a natural consequence to move on to thermonuclear bombs and so on and so forth, to the point where the entire human race has been in jeopardy for the past 60 years. So there is no surprise here that the national security state, the United States, has now come to the point where everyone's phone call, everyone's email can be monitored. And I don't think people should be surprised. We have allowed this to happen by degrees over the past 40 years, say. And in tandem with what the National Security Agency does, and the FBI and all these abbreviated, hyphenated, lettered organizations, what they do is no different from what credit agencies, credit reporting agencies, and banking institutions have been doing, what credit bureaus have been doing. They collect all the information on your commercial transactions, whether or not you buy a house, if you rent, have you ever been arrested. This all goes into what is laughingly referred to as a credit file. It's not a credit file. It's a file designed to deny credit. So in tandem with that, you have the national security state collecting as much information as they possibly can. Now, I would take issue with the word spying. I don't think they're spying on us. I don't think the government is picking you, Rock, or me and spying on us. What they are doing, right, though, is keeping a database of every single telecommunications you make and that I make. Now, allegedly, their purpose for that is to run those through supercomputers and find keywords that might lead them to so-called terrorists, which to me is a bunch of hog snot. There's a good way to end all of this. It's very simple. Close every single foreign U.S. military base. Bring U.S. troops home. That's A. B, a blanket apology to all the nations that we have invaded, either with armies or with drone aircraft, and killed millions of innocent civilians for no reason whatsoever except to expand the power of the U.S. corporate slash security state. Now, if we ever want to do that, see, a lot of people say there's no way out of this. We've gotten ourselves into, painted ourselves into a corner. There's no way to get out of this. That's a lie. It's a very simple way to get out of this, a very simple way to deal with planetary weather change, or climate change. There's a very simple way to deal with terrorism, and there's a very simple way to deal with all these economic problems. But the solutions are not being taken by the people in the organizations who are in power, and they will not take them. So if things are ever to change, it's going to be up to the people to make the change.
Well, I'm in redundant respect for all of that, and it is the people being shying away from the republic and going into a democracy of who knows what and what's to come. But what do you think we can do to, as civilians and as patriots and as people of this nation, to move forward and make sure that our government doesn't continue in its path of destruction that it has been? And how do we bring everything back and bring the nation back into a republic that works for the people and not for the commercial bankers and so on? What's your take on it?
Well, I don't think that's possible. Excuse me. Given the setup, the political and economic setup in this country, what you just suggested, while it's a good idea, it's literally impossible. In the first place, this concentration of power has become so massive that where do you begin to dismantle it? A. B, power will never dismantle itself. And the gathering in of power is done for a very simple reason, for the sake of gathering in power. There's no other motive here. The concentration of economic wealth, the concentration of power, the use of torture, all of these types of behaviors are done for their own worth. I mean, you don't torture someone to get the truth. You torture someone because you can torture them. So I don't think that there is any way possible to reclaim something, some mythology that we never really had. I think if we woke up to the fact, and I don't mean that in a sarcastic way or a denigrating way, but if we came conscious, let me put it that way, the fact that, first of all, this country was put together on the basis of genocide and slavery. There's no way to avoid that. Now, we're not taught that in elementary school, of course, but that's how this country was put together. If we take a look at what the capitalist theory and application has done to a normal person, let's take a Joe. He gets up in the morning, he goes to work in order to make money, in order to pay bills. The bills that he's supposed to pay are the bills that he's accumulated because he bought a car, he bought furniture, he bought a house, he has to buy food, he wants to educate his children, and on and on and on. That is a construct that it simply is not going to work, ultimately. If you take a look, it hasn't worked. Now, I know I can get a lot of argument from people to say, well, look at all the people who have been educated. Look at the economic machine that the United States has become. But capitalism is a system that eventually devours itself. Think of the image of the snake swallowing its own tail, because capitalism demands expanding everything, expanding markets, expanding this, expanding that. We live on a finite planet. I mean, we only have so much we can take out of the ground, so much we can dump into the air, so much we can remove from the seas, and then the whole goddamn thing comes to a screaming halt. It just collapses all at once. So right. There is no way to reclaim. What are we trying to reclaim, Rock? Are we trying to reclaim a theory? I mean, keep in mind that the framers were slaveholders. Keep in mind that every single generation that this nation has produced has figured out one way or another to murder other people around the planet by the tens of millions. We have had all kinds of reasons and excuses and rationales for doing it. I'm reminded of the French philosopher Denis Diderot, and I'm not trying to sound like an educated man because I am not, but Denis Diderot, who was part of the Enlightenment, he was a French philosopher, and there's a phrase that he came up with that has stuck with me for the past 30 years, and the phrase is simply this: man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. And I think that speaks volumes. The king, in this case, is our economic system. This madness of religion that is devouring the planet. I mean, all of our confrontations with Muslims around the globe is just a continuation of the Crusades. This is madness. Greg Palast, the reporter and author, put it very succinctly when he titled his last book, Armed Madhouse. That's where we live, in an armed madhouse. So I don't see a way.
I'm in total agreement.
Yeah, and I don't see a way to fix it. It has to be stopped. It has to be ended. And I will tell you, within the past 5 years, I've been turned on to Deep Green Resistance. It's a book that was written, that's a theory written by Derek Jensen. And I would recommend that people just read it. Deep Green Resistance. The author is Derek Jensen. That will explain how to bring this madness to a stop. Now, it's not a very pleasant book to read, because one of the conditions of saving the planet, saving the human race, is going to be what is euphemistically called population reduction. And it's going to happen one way or another anyway. So I think if anyone wants to get a clear view of the only way to stop this insanity, then read the book Deep Green Resistance.
Well, that would go in line with my consensus that this is what they're trying to do with the wars and things of that nature. But as I look at the picture, it's not about the population reduction. It's just about the business of warfare. And let's move on to a different aspect of it. I have a question from Ray in Illinois, who's one of our listeners, and he's asking, what can we do to break away from the two-party system, the Democrats and the Republicans? Because as far as I know, I don't see any difference, and then I believe you don't either. And what is your opinion on that?
Well, in the first place, you can't use the system to defeat the system. I mean, that can't be done. If you try to go that route, which is what we've been told for years, here's what we've been told. The Republicans are thugs and murderers. The Democrats are cowards and liars. So we have to get a third-party candidate. I know. Let's go with the Greens. No, I know. Let's go with the Peace and Justice Party. No, I know. Let's go with this other party. And then how do you get that person, whoever your candidate is, how do you get them on the ballot for city council, county commissioner, state representative, senator, president, vice president? How do you do it? Very simply, you can't. The Democrats and the Republicans have engineered the system to the point where it is impossible to get someone on the ballot with the kind of support necessary to get them elected. Now, before your listeners say Malloy's out of his mind, of course, Ralph Nader has been on the ballot or was on the ballot through four or five presidential elections. Right. How much the system is skewed, though, to the point where it takes money, it takes organization, it takes massive infusions of money. And for a system to be set up that way means one thing. The people that have the money will be able to work the system. The people who do not have the money will not be able to. Democrats and Republicans, the difference between the two, in my opinion, is a matter of degrees. It has absolutely nothing to do with one party being in favor of human rights and the other party being a war party. That's nonsense to even think that way any longer. And again, all this stuff I'm saying, all you have to do is look at the past 30 years. Look at what we've been doing.
Correct. I'm former military myself, and I was able to see early on that when you don't go in the direction that they want you to go in, that you're shunned out very, very...
Very quickly and very finally.
Yep. I have another question from a young lady that's in Florence, Arizona, or a young man. It's Florence in Arizona. And she's worried about this Obama healthcare thing going into effect or what's going to happen in 2014. By the way, we are on the People Speak Radio. My guest is Mike Malloy. Mike, go ahead.
As far as the Affordable Care Act, I'm not sure of a good metaphor. I guess it would be you meet a woman in the street who's starving to death. She's crawling along the street, starving to death, and you're right out in front of a restaurant when you come in contact with her, and you've got $1,000 in your pocket. So what do you do? Do you take her in and provide her a meal, or do you walk in, ask the server for a piece of bread and go outside and hand her a piece of bread? So you've done your little act here of handing a starving woman a piece of bread. This Affordable Care Act is just further evidence that if anyone thinks Obama is anything but a corporatist like every other politician in Washington, they're kidding themselves. What this country needs in terms of medical care is what a civilized organization, a civilized society should have. And that's single-payer health care, where every single person who lives in the United States contributes X amount of dollars into a fund that is then available for health care if we are going to insist on fee-for-service. The truth of the matter is that, and this comes out in Deep Green Resistance in Derek Jensen's book, any system where you are using money to sustain, in this case, sustain life, then what's the quickest conclusion you can draw? Very simple. If you don't have money, you die. If you do
exactly.
have money, you live. So Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as these right-wing freaks call it, is utterly and absolutely ridiculous. It's a crust of bread being handed to someone who's starving, when it's entirely possible to take that person inside and give them an entire meal.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, I hate to be so simplistic, but this is the way I talk to myself.
Right. Well, I'm in total agreement with you, because the way I look at it is it's going to be something that's also going to be forced upon us, whether it's going to be being jailed if you don't have the health insurance or things of that nature, and more of the police state type of scenarios that'll go on. I have another question from a Joyce in Connecticut, and the question is, do you believe things are beyond changing? Well, you've already stated that, of course. Using the system, is a revolution necessary, and what kind of revolution do you think would be proper?
First of all, I think things are beyond repair in terms of only acknowledging the tools that seem to be available to us, i.e. working through the system, or putting 30 million people in the street to bring the machine to a stop. I'm reminded of what Mario Savio said back in 62 or 63 about, you know, stopping the machine, because sometimes the machine becomes so odious and what it is doing is so horrible that people have to actually throw themselves onto the gears of the machine in order to bring it to a stop. And he was of course speaking in an entirely different context. I mean, my God, this is before Kennedy was murdered. So but the point he was trying to make, I think, is that you have got to make whatever the machine is, whether it's economic or political or military or whatever it is, you've got to make it stop. If you can't make it stop, then you're defeated before you begin. There's no way, again, there's no way to change anything anymore, not that there ever was. But there was always the illusion of change. Well, if I don't like something, I'll just get a petition going, and that'll influence my representative. The representatives and senators don't work for us any longer. They work for the organizations or the political action committees that provide the funding that put them in office. So as far as how do we make this go away, I don't know how else to put it. The system that is being used now has to be stopped. It has to be dismantled. In Deep Green Resistance, the advocacy is for there are three different levels of trying to make things change. One of them is to do nothing and see if the machine eventually cranks down at the cost of billions of lives and just suffocates itself and dies. The only problem
that'll
with
never
that,
happen.
Well, it will happen if things continue. If nothing else, just planetary death from all the crap we're putting into the biosphere. The second way is with, of course, the problem with the first way is everything ends then. Now, if human beings can survive in little enclaves and colonies around the planet, eventually the planet will heal itself, and eventually, maybe 1,000 years after there has been a huge die-off of human beings, then eventually perhaps it can be restarted with a more rational coexistence with the planet that we're on. The second way is a modicum of resistance, civil disobedience, chaining oneself to the fence around the White House or whatever it is, to try to stir up a national consciousness about what's going on. A quick example of that was the massive demonstrations against the war in Vietnam back in the 60s. Now, arguably, those demonstrations eventually caused the war to wind down. But as far as I'm concerned, it might have been massive demonstrations, and I used to participate in them. But what caused the war to wind down was the United States got its ass kicked. We were beaten to a bloody pulp, and the military establishment understood that, and it was time to bug out, to cut and run. The mission was so corrupt and so filthy to begin with. To have attacked a country like Vietnam that was simply trying to assert its own sovereignty. But anyway, that's a whole different story. The third level would be resistance on a level that requires action. I kind of have to be careful with what I say here. Again, all the answers are in Deep Green Resistance in the book, and you can buy the damn book on eBay if you want to. Amazon. Right. that's the irony of all this. So there are three levels, and you read them, you take your pick, you decide which one would be the most effective.
I tend to agree with you. I seem to think that maybe a financial revolution in by hitting the banks with the financial revolution. In other words, we just shut everything down and we no longer work or pay the taxes or anything of that nature. I think that would completely shut down the machine and its role. But we will have to go to a short break very shortly. So we'll return with that question as soon as we get back on. Once again, this is a People Speak Radio. We will be taking a short break. Mike, real quick, I don't think that a forceful revolution would work. Quick answer on that.
Not to be ambiguous here, but it depends.
Okay. Well, I guess
it depends. It depends on how force is applied, where it's applied, to what degree it's applied, and what the hoped-for outcome is, and also being willing to accept the consequences. And the consequences would be incredibly severe.
Great.
And again, I recommend this book, Deep Green Resistance.
Great. We'll be right back with our guest, Mike Malloy, on The People Speak after a short break.
Got questions? The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And like millions of other responsible Americans, I smoke pot. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. And it's none of the government's business. Let's get the government out of our private lives once and for all and stop arresting smokers. Let's take a stand for personal freedom. To learn how you can help, go to normal.org.
Come, you masters of war.
Hello, this is Cindy Sheehan. America's war on terror has become a war of terror, with endless drone bombings, continuing military occupation, as well as detention, rendition, and torture still being practiced under the current administration. I lost my precious son Casey to war, and now work towards a day when not one more mother, son, or daughter will suffer such a loss. Listen to my podcast, read my blog, and come join me at any activities I attend near you. Please visit CindySheehanSoapbox.com for more information, and let's work for peace together.
Build, destroy.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome to the People Speak Radio with my host, Mike Malloy. Thank you for listening in, tuning in to us. I'm your host, Rock Cash, for this week. As we go back into the situation, Mike, what is your take on the Israeli attacks on Syria during its own revolution there? Go ahead, Mike.
The whole situation that we refer to as the Middle East, that's the Israeli-Palestinian situation, to me is, I don't know, it's like it's cancer. It's stage four throat cancer, and it's going to, it's a good place where a global thermonuclear war could begin, which will solve all this crap real quick. Obviously, the apartheid state that the Israelis have set up against the Palestinians is something that, in rational times, the whole world would be protesting and protesting active irrational times. We live in insane times. The state of Israel. I'll tell you what is needed in the Middle East for a short term solution to this insanity is a nuclear free Middle East. Now, in order for that to happen, in the first place, Israel would have to finally declare that it has 200 to 400 nuclear bombs, which it will never do. As far as the Syrians, as far as any of these countries in the Middle East, so many of them are post World War I constructs to begin with. The boundaries and the lines that were drawn by the Europeans after the dismantling of the Ottoman Empire, and then redrawn after World War II, is just madness. I mean, there's no way that I could, if I were to try to answer your question, Rock, I just get lost in a thicket of words. I mean, there's no solution here.
Yeah, I don't see one either. Let's move away from that one because it could be a thorn in the sore foot. I have a question from a listener in Ohio, and he wants to know if you could help the people understand that real libertarians are not Republicans.
I can only answer the question by saying this. I'm having a very personally a difficult time with political labeling. Libertarian, liberal, progressive, right-wing, left-wing, Democrat, Republican. I've gotten to the point, Rock, where just about every one of those labels has the net effect of just pissing me off. And by that I mean, when I hear someone say, well, I'm a libertarian, or I'm a liberal, or I'm a Democrat, what I hear are doors closing all around this person. They are not open to, let me put it this way, the needs, this is a Derek Jensen quote, the needs of the natural world are more important than the needs of the economic system or the political system. As far as a libertarian is concerned, I don't even know what that means. And I'm not trying to be slick with you. I don't know what it means. I know some quick definitions. You know, government get the hell out of people's lives. Government stop interventionist policy around the world. A government remove restrictions on human behavior, and I can't go there. I can't. I believe in a moral law, or I should say, ethical behavior that is based on the fact that we have got to, as a species, survive on this planet. We've got to treat the planet with respect, which we have not done since the Industrial Revolution. We're just trying to murder the planet, just stabbing knives in it as quickly as we can and then wondering why it's bleeding to death. As far as political demarcation, so I just can't do it. I'm sorry. What do I think of libertarianism? What do I think of progressivism? What do I think of liberalism? Frankly, I don't think much of any of them. It's a political construct, a political idea that in the real world has no meaning whatsoever. I mean, are we to believe that that air currents around the planet, or the movement of fish species in the ocean, or tectonic plate shifting, is any of that dependent on whether someone is a libertarian or a Democrat or a liberal or a conservative? Hell no, is the quick answer. So to me, political demarcations like that are a form of masturbation. And again, I'm not trying to be a smartass here, but that's exactly how I feel.
Okay, Mike, I've got a caller on the line. We have some questioning. Can we go ahead and take their phone calls, if that's okay with you?
Sure. Just do whatever you want to do, Rod. I'm fine okay. with any of it. Go ahead.
We have Samantha online with us. Samantha, go ahead.
Hi, Mike. My question is about Monsanto, and what can I, as an individual, do to fight the big G there? What can we do?
About the only thing that can be done now, given the way the system is structured, is to continue to protest, continue to refuse to participate in your own death by a chemical company, which is all Monsanto is. It's not a biotech company, although it labels itself that way. It's a chemical company, and what it's trying to do is to increase its profits. That's all. It doesn't give a damn about whether or not farmers have a bumper crop, or whether the earth goes totally dry. It doesn't care. The only thing that you can do is to remove yourself from any participation in a system that would enhance Monsanto, and get your friends to do the same thing. Eventually, there is more serious action to take against a company like Monsanto. But again, let me just refer you to the book Deep Green Resistance.
Well, Mike, I'm concerned because I want to take all of the seeds done by Monsanto out of my farm, and the local farmers next to me continue to use Monsanto, do not have the education about it. And if I go around promoting for them to stop Monsanto, Monsanto will sue me.
Right.
And they have sued many farmers already, and they have lost everything. And I do not want to lose a farm that has been in my family for generations.
I understand.
I don't want to commit. Yeah.
All right. What do you see as a solution?
To me, the only thing I can think of is to go to all of the storage units where they have all the group meetings, and they have storage units. And yearly they have a thank you meeting where they invite all of the farmers that contribute large amounts of seeds. And the only thing I can think of is to go there and have a talk with them. But the problem is, as soon as I do, then whoever, I don't know who I'd actually be faced talking to this about it, because I don't know whether all of them might be like, oh, she's the one that did it. You know, I'm thinking I'm going to have to do it to the point that it's at the governor's office. The governor talks to them. The governor makes the entire state Monsanto-free, GMO-free. I think that's the only way I could see it happening, because if I even decide to go organic or I go Monsanto or GMO-free, how it works out is as soon as the seed becomes fertilized, their genetic code of the neighbor's farm goes into my seed.
You know,
if it goes into my seed, then I will be sued by Monsanto for using their seed, and then I will have to pay them over and over for that.
I would wish that you could get a digital recording of what you've just said over the past 2 minutes, because if you could hear what you're saying, I think it would spur you to action that would have nothing to do with talking to anybody. I think you've made the case. Who in the hell are you going to talk to? Listen to what you're saying. You've had a farm in your family for generations. All you want to do is keep the farm and keep it chemical-free, keep GMOs out of your ecosystem. And yet you also realize that if you go to a meeting of farmers and talk about that, you are going to be blacklisted in a way that could cause you to lose everything that's been in your family for generations. Now, what does that say to you, bottom line? And I'm not asking for an answer. I'm just saying, if you could hear what you just described, I'm sitting here listening to you while you put these sentences together, and I just feel myself becoming angrier and angrier.
It's so frustrating.
Yes, it is.
And again, Monsanto, the seeds of the GMO seeds that they're putting out need more water, which we
exactly. Filter
out. They
exactly.
need more fertilizer. They
no,
need
I'm,
more
I'm,
pesticides
I'm, right.
than a regular
yeah.
seed.
I'm real aware of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And your question is what to do to stop it. And there is...
Samantha, are you there? Okay.
There is a way. It sounds like Samantha is not on the line. There is a way to stop this. But again, I'm not trying to be slick here, but attending meetings... Or speaking out, using those famous four freedoms. If you remember that painting that Norman Rockwell did about the four freedoms, why we were fighting during World War II, one of them was to speak out in dissent. Dissent these days is a death sentence, either literally or figuratively speaking. For Samantha to demand that people leave her the hell alone, that chemical companies leave her alone and let her raise her crops and sell her produce on the open market, that is not going to happen. It can't happen. And I think this is a frustration that Samantha and a lot of people feel. You know in your heart, she knows in her heart, that there is nowhere to go. I mean, going to the governor of her state, what the hell would that do? The governor of her state is there, just like the governor here in Georgia is in his position.
Yeah, it's calling on deaf ears.
Yeah, they're there because the power that wants these people there put them there. So people like me, people like Samantha, people like you, individually, you know, we can stand up and howl and scream as often as we want. Look at the Occupy movement. And then what happens? Then what happens? So again, I would refer Samantha and all your listeners. I keep coming back to this, but this book was an eye opener to me, way beyond anything I expected. Get the book Deep Green Resistance, read it, and then think about it, or get some of your friends together and read it. I'm a member of a book club, Rock. There's eight men who get together. We get together once a month. And in the last book we read, this is not real serious, heavy stuff. We're reading Nelson Algren's Walk on the Wild Side right now. Before that, we read The Great Gatsby. Before that, we read Letters from the Earth by Mark Twain. Get together, get people together in a book club and read Deep Green Resistance and then discuss it.
I will do that myself. I will definitely go out and get the book and get people out there to open up their eyes a little bit
but
more.
I get like Samantha. Sometimes I will sit. I've got an 8-year-old kid. Well, she turns 9 in a month. I'm 70 years old. I have a 9-year-old child. I have grandchildren. I think about what my kids, my little kids, I've also got adult kids, but I think about what these kids, not just mine, every time I see a baby or a toddler or a 5-year-old down the street, on the bus, in the car, whatever, my heart just goddamn breaks. I will sit there and start crying, thinking about what we have done, what we have allowed to happen, how much energy and struggle it's going to take, and the cost that's going to be that's going to have to be paid in order to stop this. But every time I see a child, whether it's my own or somebody else's, I get like Samantha. I get so frustrated, I don't know what the hell to do. nobody is going to listen to me. Nobody is going to listen to her. No one's going to listen to you. Individually, you might as well be a fart in the wind. Nobody cares. And when you have a political economic system that is run by the 0.1%, run by the mega corporations, run by the military industrial state, you do not have, I mean, nothing. This whole idea of, oh, the Bill of Rights. Yeah, you want to talk about that?
Yes.
So, again, we kind of, my opinion, we're kind of on the cusp of something here. Either everything here, and by here I mean on this little blue dot that Carl Sagan called it, either we are going to get a grip and we are going to turn this around by any means necessary, and the means necessary are laid out in that book. Either we're going to turn it around or we're going to watch it end. Now, my generation may not. I don't know your age. Your generation may not. But the millennials right now, the kids that are in there from, say, 19 to 29, they will watch it end. And all the kids younger than them, they will have the horrific misfortune of having been born to begin with. So we're at a point here. And the planet, I don't want to get all metaphysical here, but the planet is trying to tell us something. And we're not listening. We're not listening. I don't give a rat's ass about the war in Syria. I don't give a rat's ass about the what the Israelis are doing. Here's what I care about. What I care about is the fact that I'm on a planet that is dying. I'm part of a system that has killed it. It's my home. I'm standing here lighting matches in my own front room, and my front room is packed with dynamite. I'm acting like an insane person. So what do I do? Continue. What do I do? Do I get on the phone and call the fire department? But they're busy with because somebody else down the street is lighting matches in their living room where the walls are stacked with dynamite.
Right, right.
So we're at a crossroads, and either we, that is human beings, are going to take a stand and stop this, or we're not.
I'm in full agreement with you, firsthand.
I'm sorry to come across like an evangelical preacher.
No, not at all. I'm a hunter myself, and I see this out there in plain sight. I see what used to be and what is now, and there's a big difference from then and now, and as far as the amount of game, and it's just really ridiculous. It's really bad. I have a question from somebody in South Africa for you, Mike, and they want to know what your take is on legalized marijuana.
Legalized marijuana. It's about the same as my take on legalized food or water. I mean, legalized marijuana is a made-up term. Marijuana has always been legal. I mean, it's just a goddamn plant. It just grows. I mean, it's just there. The fact that it's illegal is more of this garbage about saying, well, I'm, you know, why not make tomatoes illegal? You know, the whole idea of legislating a plant or a weed, to me, is just further proof of this madness.
I agree with you 1,000%.
What's my opinion on legal marijuana? It shouldn't, I mean, those terms shouldn't be connected. Marijuana is marijuana. A celery is celery. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, it's all about the opium. It's all about the opium. That's why the marijuana is illegal. Mike, one last question from me.
Sure.
And what is your take on what the Afghan war was?
Afghanistan is where empires go to die. It doesn't make any difference if it's Greek or Mongol or British or American. It's like where elephants go to die. Afghanistan, the reason I think we invaded Afghanistan is because a bunch of friends of Bush and friends of America developed a nasty attitude because we had the absolute temerity to put armed forces on their so-called holy sites in the land of where their holy sites were. Here again is this religious madness. So they came over from Saudi Arabia and murdered 3,000 people. Well, obviously, if you're invaded by Saudi Arabia, you counterattack Afghanistan. I mean, I don't have an answer for Iraq. It's madness. I mean, I could say, yeah, I know why we went to Afghanistan. There are rare earths that are necessary for the continuation of this insane electronic industry. There is silver, there's gold, there's all kinds of stuff, natural resources right. in Afghanistan. If we don't get it, oh no, China's going to get it. So I don't know what the answer to that is. It's just
exactly that's been my take on it. I believe that Afghanistan was always the checkmate between the superpowers, and that's why we kept the Russians out. And also, our drug manufacturers, they need a constant supply of opium since they're building their empire on keeping people medicated and out of the limelight just for business purposes. And that's pretty much it. Mike, I would like to thank you.
Sure.
For being our guest here.
My pleasure.
And also being very humble to me for my first time being a host on The People Speak. Once again, Mike Malloy, whose website is mikemalloy.com and whose show can be heard weeknights from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time on affiliates from coast to coast, border to border, across the fruited land, and on XM and satellite.
We stream on the web, on the internet also.
And you also stream on the internet. That's correct. Right. I was getting to that, Mike. Thank you so much.
Don't forget the title of the book, Deep Green Resistance.
I will never forget that. I will go out and get the book.
All right,
thank you very much for your time,
Mike. My pleasure talking to you. Thank you for having me as a guest. Take care.
Have a good evening.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief of us, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.